And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, July 20th, 2019, Season 13, Episode 26. I'm Scott.
I'm RJ.
And I'm Matt.
And welcome to the show, everybody. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. 334-272-9228. Check out ingamechat.net for all the links to get in touch with us. You can find us on Twitter at InGameChat. You can find us on Facebook there as well. You can email us, everyone, at InGameChat.net. We are streaming right now on Twitch. Go to twitch.tv and then search for InGameChat. You'll find us. And you can sit there and watch us broadcast live in the chat room. And you can join the chat room if you'd like to. Let me do this thing real quick so I can get this stupid board out of my face. There. Yeah, it's, we're kind of getting some people into the chat room now. Your headphones all right?
Yeah, they're good.
I didn't know if I needed to adjust your volume or anything.
No, I need the volume.
569? Episode?
Yes.
Wow.
It's been a minute.
It has.
Yeah. Wait, I don't know where... I can't remember how we started counting these things or when we started counting these things.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
We have more. This is what we consider.
I was in our archives. Like, there's some vault that I walk into, and it's just...
I can imagine, like, the little podium, and, like, you just stand with, like, the bag of...
Rolls, you know, shelves upon shelves.
Bag of sand in one hand, just like you know, trying to, like,
what?
Grab the archive.
No,
like,
no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking more of something... I'm thinking more of something along the line, like, there's a warehouse that we're in, and there's just rows and rows of...
Oh, like, tape, the end of the movie.
Of tape. Yeah.
Yes.
Which there is
cassette
not.
Cassette tapes.
Everything's digital. But no, I was looking through our archives. I found an episode from 2008 that we had labeled episode 92. And I'm thinking, wait, we're on 569. Were we on episode 92 in 2008? Or is that carried over from, like, the show that was before us that we took the name of at the time?
I barely remember last week, so 2008, I have no idea.
Regardless, to go from 92
yes.
in 2008 to 569 in 2019, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot of episodes. And I'll tell you why I was looking at our archives is because I literally came up with this idea 15 minutes before showtime, which I think RJ can attest to since he'd been sitting up here with nobody. Until right. about 2 minutes till.
Which is not the norm. Usually you two are here before I am.
Well, I was downstairs and I had this stupid idea. I just had this odd idea. Today marks the 50th anniversary of
moon landing.
Landing on the moon.
Right.
Happy moon landing day, everybody.
We interviewed a guy named Charlie Duke.
Charlie Duke, yeah, one of the astronauts from the
Apollo
missions.
One of the astronauts from the Apollo missions. And, you know, one of only 12 people who have ever set foot on the moon.
On another, you know, body.
In the entire...
human history.
Existence of the world.
Yeah.
As it stands so far. And so I went back, and that's where it comes from, episode 92, January of 2008. Mm. I don't even remember the exact date, but it was January 2008. So I had to skim through that whole episode and find the interview, which I did find. I've isolated that. I came up with the idea that in the second hour, top of the second hour, we're going to replay that interview.
How long is it?
It's about 30-some-odd minutes.
Okay, so it'll take the whole...
It'll take that whole chunk, but you know what? You don't hit this anniversary but once. Ever.
True.
And we've not been able to get him back on the show. Well, not necessarily on this show. I've tried to get him on the morning show here. And the last time I tried to get in touch with him, he was over in, I can't remember where he was. He was overseas somewhere doing some PR stuff there and couldn't get in touch with him. I knew that this week there was no way I could even try to get in touch with him to do anything just for what it is. So anyway, just to commemorate that, and I've been seeing a lot about it and everything else, I listened to just a little bit of the interview, and so we're going to replay that at the top of the hour. It absolutely has nothing to do with video games, and that is perfectly fine. I knew when I accepted the interview that we would not have anything to talk about video game worthy, but it didn't matter to any of us here.
How much of our technology has come from, you know, NASA, the Apollo missions?
I don't even need to relate it to that, man. It's just
awesome.
For... like, one of the perks of doing this job is that sometimes you get to talk to people that you want to talk to. And luckily enough, all of us really wanted to talk to this man. And I didn't really care any other way about it. I said, sure, what do we gotta push? You know, what's the promotion that you're doing where I get to talk to this man?
I wish I could have been there.
I'll do it. You know, whatever the case. It doesn't matter. Just as long as I get to talk to him, I don't care. And they were pushing something. They were in Huntsville. They were doing something. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was Omega Watches.
I think.
Yeah, I want to say.
I remember from listening
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, it was like a watch thing, a promotion. And so, you know, I took a little break in between there and said, hey, let's talk about, boy, Omegas, they're great. Back to, the, you know, whatever. It didn't matter. Just to appease them so that I could talk to a guy who had walked on the moon.
Yeah.
Didn't care any other way. And honestly, I would have extended that to anybody. Who was an astronaut who has been up or not just walked on the moon. It was just kind of icing on the cake that, yeah, this is one of the 12. And so it still gets me excited that we're actually going to replay this. I have not listened to this interview since we did it. So I'm not exactly sure. I sound a little weird. Because that was, what, over 10 years ago?
Yeah.
If listening to myself again, like, that sounds a little strange.
Apollo 16.
Yeah.
The second to last. The penultimate.
Yes, it was. And he talks mission. About that. He talks about that. He talks about reentry. He talks about his time when he was working at Mission Control mm-hmm. and talking to the astronauts from here on Earth. And all of that is, I mean, it's 30 some odd minutes of an interview here.
I think
and it's
he was
fantastic.
Working Mission Control for 11.
I believe he was. I believe that he was.
If I remember the documentaries correct.
So, anyway, that is coming up in the top of the next hour here. And just, it's a highlight of what I've been able to do here for me.
You know, somewhat related, I got to say, they finally did something awesome with the Washington Monument.
Oh, the, yeah.
With the Apollo launch on it.
Yeah, I saw that.
The image displayed on it, yeah. That's awesome.
I saw the section where they actually had it launching.
Oh, really?
And
they did
booster,
the launch?
Yeah, the booster went off and went to the second stage.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so they're actually continuing with, you know, like, they're actually going through the whole animation of it.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, because at first it was just on the launch pad. But
right, yeah, I didn't know they were actually going to do a launch with it.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Launch.
I gotta find that. So anyway... That's just a thing. We have interviewed people here. Most of the time, everybody has to do with gaming in some form, fashion, or another. But there are times when I get approached about having somebody on who may not have to do with video games at all. And I really, I jump at the opportunity to talk to those people if I get the opportunity to do so. I think one of those, Mark Hamill has everything to do with video games.
Yes.
But, the guys from... Mystery Science Theater 2000. Yeah. Mm. Nothing to do with video games. But...
Well, Brian Corbett and...
Yeah.
Oh, man. Forget the other one. Not Trace.
It's drawn a blank as well, yeah. All of a sudden. Anyway, Charlie Duke coming up the top of the next hour, which means I would say we have a lot to cram in. I was actually kind of wondering what we would talk about on this episode because I didn't have a lot of... You know, if you look at the new stuff I sent you, I didn't have a lot to go over here.
Yeah.
Matt, you've been away for a bit. What have you been playing?
So, most recently, I've been playing PC Part Picker.
Hey, I did a little bit of that this week as well. I saw the Amazon Prime deals and stuff. And I was just like, let's open up Part Picker again and let's see what we can do.
So, over the weekend, this past weekend and starting this week, my computer, which, how does that thing? Like, almost a decade?
Yours?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the one I got from you.
Oh, good God.
Exactly.
Oof. 2013 is when I built my other build.
Okay, so it was before that. This is the build before that.
Yeah.
So it's been in running...
The build I have now is from 2013... I don't know. Let me go to Part Picker and I'll tell you.
But, you know, so it's been around for a minute. It's gotten its wear, its tear, its use,
if it's any consolation,
all that stuff.
If it's any consolation, your computer was much younger than mine. when I finally did mine, so take heart there.
Yeah. So it started failing. I've been getting a perpetual blue screen of death loop.
Mm.
So it'll blue screen.
This is,
You know, like, all right, rebooting, it'll reboot, and then like in like 5 seconds later, boom, blue screen, and it keeps on doing that and doing that. Sometimes I had just enough time to go in there, like, all right, let me uninstall the last program that's installed. Mm-hmm. Didn't work, kept on rebooting, kept on blue screening. it was giving different error. The main error it was giving was memory management.
Yeah.
So I ended up like, is my RAM going bad? Which kind of sounded like, you know.
Yeah, the one I built was in 2012. The one I have now is in 2012.
Okay, so this is the one prior.
Yeah, it'd be the one prior. The one I have now, I have recently replaced. Well, I say recently. I replaced the graphics card in it, mm-hmm. and I replaced the power supply in it.
Yeah.
Those are the only two things that I've replaced in it. So, you know, and that's been good enough. Although with the new chips and everything that have been released, I'm eyeballing things.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead. So yours, yours is very
it's
old.
It's dying.
Yeah.
And it's like that
It was
slow.
Not a beast to begin with that I had built.
But it,
in 2012, it
served,
was.
It served, well, this
Have you?
This
have
is
you,
the one prior to 2012.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so.
Which would have taken it back even further.
Yeah.
You've made improvements on it since you had had it or no?
No.
You had to have gotten a new card though, right?
No.
You didn't get like a 970 or something?
Well, there was a 970 in it.
Mm-mm.
Oh, then that's what I did. I upgraded the card.
No, there was no 970.
Because there's a 970 in it now. Maybe that's the one I got from
You'd
James.
You'd be playing a lot less stuff if maybe you kept the card that was in there.
Maybe that's the one I got from James then.
The card?
Yeah, the card. Because I think I
probably, because I know he upgraded and he had the card. So probably so.
So it's been doing that. Oh, hey, Lethal. He's in the chat room. Anyways. So yeah, it's dying, and you know, so I tried to reset it and everything, and that didn't work. It's still, you know, blue screening, and like, I was like, all right, well, this really is annoying. So I decided, well, time to bite the bullet, because you know, I went to PC Part Picker, and I'm like, well, if it's the RAM, I got to get new RAM, then might as well get an SSD. Well, if I get an SSD, then I'll have to get a new motherboard. If I get a new motherboard, I'll have to get a new processor. If I do that, basically all the internal components.
Typically, I find what happens is when you start improving one part,
thing,
all the other
the
things
whole
start
thing,
going
yeah.
up. Yeah.
And so I was pricing out the different components and everything, and I'm like, it's almost just as comparable to get a sale on Newegg of a pre-built one. And so Nate sent me like, hey, here's like, have you thought about this or here's this? And so that's what I did. I bought a new PC, and it'll be coming in the mail Tuesday.
Okay.
So.
And that's what you've been playing then?
Yeah. Waiting on PC because it's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be getting a GeForce RTX 2070 is my video card. That's a part of it.
What do you get? Yeah. What are can you share your list? Have you been on?
Let's
PC
see. It's the AMD. So I haven't done AMD in quite a while.
Yeah. Look, nobody's done AMD in quite a while, honestly. Yeah.
So it's the AMD Ryzen 7 second generation. It's a 3.7 gigahertz processor.
But it's what's is it a 3000 series?
27.
It's the 25 or 26.
27,000 X.
27. Okay.
I'm gonna get 16 gigs of DDR4 RAM. I'll have a 240 gig solid state, and then also a 2 terabyte, just you know, for storage and everything, mm-hmm. and Windows 10.
Yeah, looking into upgrading like this, it actually means I don't have to spend as much. Although I do have to. I mean, if I get a new chip, I've got to get a new board.
Yeah,
I hate that.
Yeah, we were saying in the chat room about you can't just Randall said he can't upgrade just one thing. I don't think that's
no,
even
it's
possible.
No, it's like potato chips. You can't
have
just one.
I mean, I upgraded my card, and that was fine.
If
you
do slow upgrades along the years, it's not as bad. But like you know, 10 years later or so, that it's
well. The problem comes when you update your CPU because
then you have
your
to get
sockets and everything have to
sockets,
yeah.
motherboard, well,
yeah,
different
all
type
that.
Of RAM.
That's
always in my case. Anyway.
Yeah, because
different stuff I got to pick up now.
Once. Some part of the motherboard has to be, like, if you want to change your RAM, you can stick to whatever you've got to stick with that works for that motherboard. But if you
right.
want to change the core of the system, the CPU, then you've got to change out the motherboard, which means you've got to get new RAM because likely the old RAM doesn't work on it. Yeah. And it just gets annoying.
It's random. RAM, but, CPU, and motherboard tied together.
Yeah.
Got to have it that
but
way.
But so at least with this, I'll have, like, the better processor to the, you know, I'll upgrade everything so my Oculus will work, you know, more mm-hmm. fluidly. So, you know, and it says, you know, VR capable. I'll actually have working USB 3.0 because, like, those hubs were like, you know, not working. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm excited.
Okay.
New parts coming.
What about you, RJ? What have you been playing?
A whole bunch of Grand Theft Auto Online. Still trying to earn money in that game. It's a grind. It's, like I said last time, it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a grind for a very long time. In anticipation for the new DLC coming out on the 23rd. They've confirmed the date for the 23rd for that, so we're going to be working towards getting that. They say you need about 30 million, based on some folks I've looked at on YouTube videos, their guides and everything. About 30 million is what you need. I'm nowhere near that. So I'm just going to watch and learn and see how everyone else reacts and see how they do that. See how they do it that way. A little bit of a Borderlands 2. We did some more power leveling with a friend of ours. We got together and started helping him build his character.
You getting
up.
Ready for 3? You getting it 3?
I'm not. I don't know yet. I'm probably going to wait and see.
That's about the appropriate answer.
I'm probably going to wait and see on that because my experience with Borderlands 2, the pre-sequel,
it was kind of souring.
It wasn't that the game was bad. It was just
meh.
I couldn't get any connection with any of the characters in the game at all.
I couldn't feel
for any of them.
Even Claptrap seemed kind of like, all right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was good for a side character, something that was amusing, but to play with, no. Didn't even consider doing that in any of the times I've interacted with him. So I'm going to wait and see on Borderlands 3 to see if any of the characters are interesting enough.
They haven't had Claptrap as a playable character, have they?
Not since the pre-sequel.
Was he playable in pre-sequel?
He's one of the characters.
Oh, you could play as Claptrap?
See, it's like Jack and the Athena, whoever Athena was, Wilhelm. Jack, Athena, Wilhelm, Sheriff of Nottingham, the lady who will become the Sheriff of Nottingwood or whatever it was.
And, you see how forgettable it is? I totally brain dumped that whole game, basically, other than like, it was all right.
Yeah. But outside of that, I want to see if the characters are interesting enough to get behind, you know? Someone who supports, like I was wanting to see a support character in these games. Roland in the first one, Axon in this one, to be able to support the team with the artillery on the field and backing up with shields and things like that. So I'm waiting to see if something like that's going to happen, but it won't be until the release of the game anyway. But outside of that, that's pretty much all I've been playing this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I've been playing, that's been Destiny, that's it. Yeah. Although I want to, you know, Lethal Migrants.
Lethal called it.
Yeah, I know, you only play Destiny, you don't need to build a computer. I mean, I do more with the computer than just actually play Destiny on it. I know that with some of these, with the better CPU and processing, that sort of thing, I can do these videos maybe a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
The processing on them and everything else.
All that.
Yeah, get that maybe a little bit faster as well. And just be prepared for when something comes down the pike that I do want to play. And I have a lot of games to play on my PC.
Like MechWarrior 5.
No, I'm not going to play that.
Kevin and I loaded up MechWarrior Online and then uninstalled it. It wasn't that good.
Oh, okay. Mm. But yeah, I just, you know, kind of dipping my toe back into it just to look around. I'm not doing anything yet. My system's still pretty good. I'm looking at my build right here.
Yeah.
An i7-3770.
Okay.
Which was, that was a 3.5 gigahertz quad core, and it's been fine. It really, really has. 16 gigs of RAM. A 2 terabytes, a hard drive, a 256 gig solid state drive. I had a GTX 680 when I bought this in 2012. That was a 2 gigabyte card. Now my card in it is, I think, 6 or 9 gigs or something. That's been changed. Oh, God, it's got a disk drive in it. That's something that was stupid to put in.
How so?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Just why? Because I've never used it. The DVD, CD writer, whatever that is. Yeah. No. Yeah. Never
still
used it.
Still got mine. Still got mine. Still use it.
We still got it. But, I mean, I put it in there. I've used it. I think maybe I used it to install Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, is it. I really haven't used it at all. Mm. You know, games don't come on discs anymore. You buy a PC game retail. You're getting a piece of paper inside with a download code.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting a disc anymore. So, just like, eh. Destiny is really all I've been playing. Just kind of working through the Tribute Hall stuff. Did the new raid. Last week, I say the new raid, it was new to me because I had not done it. It was the raid that they added when they did Forsaken back in last September, last October, whenever it was.
Yeah.
I never touched it until this weekend. I'm basically being forced to do that in order to do some of these triumphs that I'm trying to get through and do. So I got that done. In fact, I ran it again last night as well, and that went very well.
Do you get any special items from it?
And you get gear and stuff, and you get a chance at an exotic that only drops from that specific raid.
Any good exotic?
Huh?
Is it a good exotic?
Thousand Voices? Yeah, it's not the best. It is in the Gambit mode when somebody invades. Usually you can tell who your invader is by the fact that they're carrying that weapon. It's a laser sight. I think it's a fusion. A laser sight fusion rifle. In other words, it's like... you remember when everybody went nuts with the...
Prometheus lens?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a really powerful Prometheus lens.
That was powerful enough. Before they nerfed it.
Put it that way, then. It's an unnerfed Prometheus lens. How about that?
Have they even made an exotic scout rifle?
Yeah, the Mida Mini Tool. Or Mighty Multitude. Mida Multitude.
One that stands out, I mean.
Jade Rabbit is also a scout, I think. That might be a Pulse. Jade Rabbit, I think, is a Pulse.
Not bad. I use that.
I'll see something that stands out.
What do you mean stands out?
I mean significantly powerful when it comes to...
They haven't made a scout rifle significantly powerful since Destiny 2 launched. Well, no. Destiny 2, year one, the Mida was good. The multi-tool was good. And then they nerfed scout rifles.
Jade is a scout.
Jade is a scout, yeah. Mm-hmm. They nerfed the scouts into oblivion. Jade, though, because random I was playing with, it was fun. Rogue Hunter, back from the old COG days, yeah. Anthony. He was on the other night. I was on. Random was on. And B.A. Penguin, Nick Paleo, from the old EVAV days and Co-Optimus and COG days as well. He was on and joined us as well, and we were all playing together. It was really fun to kind of just all of us playing again. Mm-hmm. It was really nice. We went into Crucible, and we played some PvP together. And that was a lot of fun. So that was nice. But Random got his catalyst done for Jade, and he said it does a really, really the handling on it. In other words, it you don't move. You fire the gun and you don't move. You know, there's no recoil whatsoever. It's just a straight line of bullets.
Cool.
So yeah, laser beam is what he said. Anyway, we're going to take a break real quick, but before we do, we're going to go to the phones. I'm guessing this is Chris, and I would be right. Hey, Chris.
What's going on?
Not much. What's going on with you, man?
Yeah, I just wanted to catch y'all up with a few Switch games I've been playing here lately. I've been playing that Mana Collection that they finally decided to translate and bring out. You know, the physical edition is going to be coming out at the end of next month, but... I also picked up Graveyard Keeper not too long ago when it came out.
That's a tiny build, guys. I like that game.
Yeah, I've been having a blast with that. And oh Lord, that's hilarious and fun.
Mm-hmm. What type of game is that?
Is it like a Graveyard Keeper simulator thing or something?
You get transported to another world and you have to keep up with the graveyard and you know do a church service every Sunday and. Yeah, it's weird. It's one of the main characters in there is a talking skull that loves beer and wine and wants you to bring him beer and stuff to tell you more hints about everything, like ain't going to do him any good, like how is he going to have any taste buds and stuff. But yeah, it's got a lot of silly humor and stuff in there like that and things like that. But yeah, I've been enjoying that. It's kind of like Stardew Valley in a way. It's kind of like a management sim, kind of like that.
All right.
Yeah, sounds like keep the spirits happy so they don't go out of control, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I started playing SteamWorld Dig 2 again on the Switch and been juggling all three of those and hadn't touched the PlayStation in a long time. Mm. Now, I guess not since I finished Bloodstained.
Right.
But, yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing and, you know, having a ball playing those three.
Yeah, I brought my Switch today, and unfortunately... Due to just circumstances, I wasn't able to actually even turn the thing on while I was here. Mm. I just got caught up with their stuff, and then I had that wild idea to do the thing with the interview. And so, I plan on getting back into my Switch at least to take a look at things. I've got my trip coming up soon to go into PAX, Seattle. And so I'll need something to mess around with on the plane. Instead of doing it the night before like I normally do, I'm actually going to break out all my handhelds and do my updates and everything else ahead of time.
Smart.
Get a little bit ahead of the game this time instead of trying to do it the night before. So, all right, Chris, we appreciate you calling.
All right, y'all have a good one.
Take care. You too, man.
Now.
All right, we'll be back with more of In-Game Chat here coming up in just a bit. Don't forget that coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to run an interview that we did with astronaut Charlie Duke. This was back in January of 2008, and that is coming up at the top of the hour to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. So last week we did, I picked a composer and I just grabbed tracks that this composer had done for video games, and that's actually working out pretty well. This next composer that we picked for this week is Winifred Phillips. That's her name, Winifred Phillips, and here is one of the games that she worked on. It is Assassin's Creed Liberation.
Oh, yeah, the side story.
Yeah, and this is the main theme to that. We'll be back with more In-Game Chat right after this. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. This is music from Shattered State. The track is called Aftermath. Highlighting the music of Winifred Phillips, a video game composer, for our bumper music this weekend. Coming up again at the top of the hour here, we will be replaying an interview we had with astronaut Charlie Duke from 2008 to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. Absolutely, again, has nothing to do with video games, but we don't care. There were actually more. There's four, I think, that are left now. At that time in 2008, there were more than just four. I don't remember how many were still alive in 2008, but you get an opportunity to talk to somebody who has actually stepped foot on the moon, and you will take that opportunity because it is unlikely that that is going to happen again. Maybe in my lifetime. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, welcome back to the show. I want to make sure and get some of the some news out of the way here that there was. There wasn't much. Tetris Effect is coming to PC, but it'll be an Epic Games Store exclusive, which, you know, I'm fine with that.
Sure. Again, I just want to be able to play it.
I don't have a problem with the Epic Games Store. Yeah, I think they got a year on it that they'll have. So
besides, I'll be playing on console anyway. So
now the hard part on that would have been if. You know, let's go back to my Destiny, my love of Destiny. Mm-hmm. If Bungie had announced that, hey, Destiny 2 is we're leaving the Battle.net app and we're going to be on Epic Games Store for a year and then we'll be on Steam after that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then what do I do? You know,
I think the only concern you'd have is your save file.
Well, I mean, I don't know how it would work.
And who you could play with,
right? Which is a big deal.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how that would work because the way that it works currently, right now. So Google Stadia, right? That's a PC sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if I take my if I migrate from Battle.net and move it to Google Stadia, then that could be my master save. That doesn't mean that I get to play it on PC with Steam players. I only get to play with Google Stadia players.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's still on PC, that is considered an environment of its own. So I cannot play with people on Steam.
Well, the thing would be is to play with where the most people are.
Well, I would say go where the people I play with now mm-hmm. are going. And, of course, they're staying with PC.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, if they divided it up like that and said, we're going to be on the Epic Game Store for a year, and then we'll move over to Steam, that would bring about a little conundrum for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people would be on Steam and would not... I think a lot of people would have issue with going to Epic Game Store for it.
Mm-hmm. Especially just for a year.
So does that mean you don't play this? That's the weird part, is that I don't know. Thankfully, they haven't put us into this position.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going directly to Steam, but that could have worked out a little bit differently, and it could have made it even worse, which they probably looked at this and said, yeah, let's just stick with Steam, and we don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got the player base already. Epic Game Store is doing this weird stuff. Although, if the cross-save fixes it a bit, but I would only be able to... So, Random in the chat room says the cross-save fixes that a little bit. I take my account from Battle.net, from mm-hmm. Blizzard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say this is going to be my master account.
Right.
This is the one that if I play it on PS4, if I play it on... Well, if I'm playing it on Steam, which is where it's going,
right.
That would be mine. Well, if they did the Epic Game Store split, then I would have to buy the game. Well, no. I would have to buy the new content on Epic Game Store.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to also buy the new content on PS4. I'm going to have to do that anyway by being on Steam. But once it opened up to Steam, that would provide a third platform for me to now have to buy the game on
mm-hmm.
in order to play with everybody over there. After a year is up.
You ever had a triple dip again?
Triple dip again? Yeah, I've not had to. I've done it out of support.
Okay, out of support, but not out of necessity.
Not out of necessity, no.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
Super Mario Brothers, how many different platforms and, you know, versions have I done that game? I mean, you know, the original NES, I got the Super NES. With the Mario All-Stars, I got virtual consoles, I got it on my handheld, I got it back when they got the Game Boy, when they had the carts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I bought that game several times over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, still the same Super Mario Brothers, the original Game Boy Super Mario Brothers DX or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got it then.
You said you bought the exact same game.
Well, I mean...
Was that out of necessity, though?
I mean, it's not a...
No, what I'm saying is the exact same game. No different features, no anything like that. It's the exact same game.
Can't really count Super Mario All-Stars.
That's what I mean. Like, I bought Virtual Fighter years and years, but it's Virtual Fighter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, things like that.
I think the Super Mario Brothers DX, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think, one thing they added to that was, like, the Music Maker. But mm-hmm. it's still, like, the original Super Mario Brothers, you know, on the Game Boy.
Yeah, but something
then,
extra.
Huh?
But something extra.
Yeah. Well, then I guess you know, the virtual consoles; those are just Super Mario Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
I didn't buy those. If they weren't free, I didn't pick those up.
I bought those.
Yeah, I didn't.
You know,
buy
because
those.
Like that's one of my. You know, I love the original three Mario Brothers, mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've bought those on different platforms.
Yeah.
I've never triple dipped a game. In the sense that I had to, like I would have to with Destiny if I want to play with people on Xbox, PS4, Steam, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, likely I won't until there's like a big sale or something and then pick it up at a discount and then join in and do what I need to do. But I will say I've done it out of support. I've done it for some of the Burnout games, I think, for Criterion. I'm not necessarily, no.
I've had to do it for Street Fighter for tournaments because they swapped from PS3, then went to 360. So I bought the 360 version and started practicing on that. So I've double dipped in that.
I double dipped. Yeah. You're right. Well, I double dipped for that. I double dipped on Paradise for Xbox and then also for PC when it came out. And then I think I picked it up on PlayStation 3, used or cheap or something like that when it was
available. Grim Fandango. What do you consider triple dipping? Like, you know, I bought the original Grim Fandango when it came out.
Then you bought the remastered version.
Okay. I bought the remastered version, both on PC and
I would say triple dipping being the exact same game three times.
Across different platforms, but you buy the exact same game three times.
Yeah, I would say three times buying the exact same game.
I guess like a Grand Theft Auto 5, you know, I got on the 360, but then I got on the PS4 and then on the PC.
That would be triple dipping. I would count that triple dipping.
Okay, even though like they added on the PS4 and PC, they added the first person feature that went on.
No. They're adding a feature, but you still bought the same game.
There's one. I've done it before.
I would say that would be a triple dip for you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Street Fighter 4 would be triple dipping for me because I did get the one on Steam. That's right. So mm-hmm. PS3, 360, and Steam. So yeah.
I will say I've never outright bought them at the full retail value. Mm-hmm. You know. I picked it up. Oh, it's on sale. Well, I remember enjoying that game on this version. I'll pick it up here. It's $5 on this system.
One at 60, one at 40, and on Steam, I think I got it maybe like 12, 13 bucks.
Dangerous Golf. That's the one I was thinking of.
Okay, yeah, because you supported High Seas?
Three Fields Entertainment.
Yeah. High Seas.
I don't know where you got High Seas from.
Yeah, close enough.
But anyway. Three Fields Entertainment, I wanted to show them support, so that's what I picked up. What else? So we talked about Tetris Effect coming to PC.
I'm getting a free copy of Wolfenstein Youngblood.
Well, that's nice. How'd you pull that off?
With the PC.
Oh, comes with the PC you picked up. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, with the stuff that you get. Yeah.
I'm getting that and Control.
What was the choice? Or did you get both?
I get Control and Youngblood, as well as, I think, 3 months of Xbox games with Gold
or
whatever.
That's cool.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, did any of you catch the Newegg sale on PlayStation Plus?
No.
Newegg, they give you the newsletter every week.
They had it for cheap, the PlayStation Plus. Stuff.
A year of PlayStation Plus for $40 instead of 60.
That's not bad.
I wanted to pick up three, but they limited you to two only. So
of course they did.
Yeah, so I won't have to renew until August of 2021 now. So I got that going for me at least.
I need to figure out when I need to renew mine.
I'm in that boat for the Xbox Game Pass thing. I don't have to renew that one until 2021 or 2022, I can't remember.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a minute.
Yeah. So yeah, it's real nice.
It is nice, especially not having to pay as much as you normally would if you had to renew it every year.
Ubisoft is announcing over 110 titles that will come to their Uplay Plus subscription service. Over 40 will be Ultimate or Premium Editions that are included. May not include all the special edition content. But they're bringing. Oh, it's a very big list. The full list is first unveiled. Wow, $14.99 a month. You'll get to have Uplay Plus. Trying to look here. Oh Jesus, two annos, 1800 and 2205. You'll get Assassin's Creed. Out your ears. Mm-hmm. Mm. Director's Cut, Brotherhood Deluxe, Chronicles, China, India, and Russia, Freedom Cry, Assassin's Creed 2 Deluxe, Assassin's Creed 3 Plus Liberation Remastered, Black Flag, Odyssey, Ultimate Edition, Origins, Gold Edition, Origins Discovery Tour, Revelations, Standard Edition, Rogue Deluxe Edition. Revelations is only standard. Maybe they didn't have anything else, I guess. Syndicate, you get the gold edition. And Unity, you get the standard edition again. Interesting.
Jeez.
That's a lot of assassinating.
That is a lot. Yeah. Far Cry 2, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, Far Cry 3, 4, 5, New Dawn, Primal. What else? Might and Magic, a bunch of those. Prince of Persia. A lot of those. Sands of Time, Two Thrones, Warrior Within, then the Forgotten Sands Deluxe Edition, and then the 2008 one based on the film.
Was that the 2008 with the PS3?
No. I'm sorry, Forgotten. I think Forgotten Sands was the one that was based on the movie.
Yeah,
2008 was the one with Nolan North and the.
Is that 2008?
I want to say it was. You may have to look it up. I don't know.
I'll look it up.
No, it sounds about right, but. long time ago.
Silent Hunter, The Settlers. Oh, dear God, I've hit the Tom Clancy's. There is a lot of Tom Clancy.
Yes.
In
AC.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't bring in my trash bag to keep it. I'm not sure.
Want me to check right quick?
That sounds like rain.
Hang on.
Or wind?
Oh, boy.
I have an umbrella in the car.
Wait, you know what? Assume it's rain, because we were going to have a wet weekend, I was told. So, yeah.
I think that's rain. Okay. Yeah, I think that's rain. Rainbow Six Vegas, Vegas 2, Lockdown, Siege, Rainbow Six 3, Rainbow Six Quarantine, Splinter Cell, Blacklist, Chaos Theory, Conviction, Double Agent, Division 2, Ghost Recon, Future Soldier, Ghost Recon Wildlands, Breakpoint, Ghost Recon, End War. It's a lot. Oh, and Uno.
Do you get Hawks?
Huh?
Do you get Hawks?
Hawks.
Hawks is not, it's not called, let's see. No, there is no Tom Clancy Hawks.
Yeah. Aw. Yeah. That's sort of like a forgotten one now.
Yeah. I played music for Hawks the other
day. I know, that's what it reminded me about. That, like you just don't hear about it anymore.
In conjunction with that bit of news, Ubisoft has said that PC has now surpassed PS4 to become their top revenue generator.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Ubisoft reported higher than expected performance in its first quarter of 2019-20, led notably by Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Rainbow Six Siege, and Player Recurring Investment. I haven't heard of that game. The PC accounted for 34% of Ubisoft's net bookings for the quarter. PlayStation 3 was 31, Xbox One was 18, Nintendo Switch was 5. And mobile gaming was 7. Ubisoft had recent... it's attributed to the PC surge, primarily to the strength of the strategy game Anno 1800. Is that one.
Hmm.
Is what they're saying. So, which, good job. Now, on the other end of that, Microsoft has been making a concerted effort towards PC gaming with things like the Game Bar and Windows 10... and its DirectX Ray Tracing API. That's all been well and good. Despite it all, however, the company reported a drop in gaming revenue over the past year. It's the only area that Microsoft saw a decline as it tallied up the numbers. It apparently does not come from the PC, though. Coming off the fourth quarter for its fiscal 2019 period, Microsoft noted a 10% decline in gaming revenue and a 3% drop in Xbox software and services. Every other sector saw an uptick in revenue... but that. The biggest culprit is the company's Xbox console. Xbox hardware revenue dropped a whopping 48%. Primarily due to a decrease in volume of consoles sold. They didn't provide any context for the slide there.
Game like I haven't heard anything like about?
Instead of context, I want to see the content. I'm thinking of the latest content that's been coming out for the Xbox.
It's
lately.
Just been like, all right, like Days Gone, right? Have you heard anything about that?
When it came out, I heard some stuff about it.
But still, like, do you know anyone playing it? Seems to like come and go.
Okay, is anybody streaming it on Twitch?
I haven't even looked.
Yeah. So, I mean, what exclusives have they had had lately?
Who, Microsoft?
Yeah.
Well, Days Gone was Sony. Days Gone was PS4.
Was it PS4?
Yeah, that's Sony. That's why I was wondering why you're bringing that up, but that's fine.
Oh, well, never mind.
I mean, it's the example.
I thought it was.
I say the example still works, but, you know, that's still something that's like, I haven't heard a lot of. I was wondering why you're bringing it up. No, that is not.
I didn't know it was PS4 exclusive.
No, that's. Try again for another Microsoft exclusive title. Forza, obviously, you can always throw that out there. Gears is coming up in September.
Yeah, Gears 5, right?
Yeah. That's coming up in September. Halo is way down the line. But as far as exclusives for them, they've got some exclusives, but most now show up on either the console or the PC. You know, they're trying to bridge that gap of, you know, if we have it, you can play it on your PC or on our console.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you buy it digitally, you can play it on either one. Mm. You know, you can play it, you know, not cross-play, but if you get it on one system, you get it on the other system. So... Yeah. What else? Spider-Man and Batman dominate the all-time best-selling superhero games list. Let's see. They technically present. Yeah, Spider-Man and Batman have a lot to be excited for because with their forces combined, they are technically present in all 10 of the top-selling superhero games of all time. Lifetime top 10 best-selling superhero games, physical and full game digital, ranked in dollar sales. Number 10 is Injustice 2. Number 9 is Batman Arkham Asylum. Number 8 is Injustice 1. Number 7 is Spider-Man the Movie 2. Number 6 is Spider-Man the Movie. 4 and 5. Number 5 is Lego Marvel Super Heroes. And number 4 is Lego Batman. Number 3 is Batman Arkham Knight. 2 is Batman Arkham City. And the number 1 best-selling superhero game lifetime sales is Marvel's Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
Yeah, it is.
So, dear Rocksteady, get on it, would you?
Yeah, we could use another Batman.
I don't know if I want another Batman, but I'd like to know what they're doing. I'd like to know what they're working on. I'm not even hopeful that it's another Batman. I'm fine if they put Batman to rest for a bit, you know, which they have.
Especially after the ending
of the last one.
Yeah. I mean, they have sort of. I'm more than happy with like Warner Brothers throwing that to a different development studio. Warner Brothers Montreal comes to mind, who did Origins. Mm-hmm. Let them work on it, and Rocksteady, you guys do something else. Doesn't have to be a Superman game. Doesn't have to be a Batman game.
All right, my question to
something. Everybody. I'd like to know what they're doing.
Do you think it's possible to have a good Superman game?
Yeah,
it's possible.
I really think you can. I don't know how. Don't ask me that. So, I can't give you that answer.
What was
overpowered?
I think the hang-up was implementation of controls of using all his powers and abilities, right? That was one of the hang-ups of it, wasn't it?
I mean, Batman can be defeated. He's immortal with money and training and whatever.
Yeah.
Superman.
You said he was immortal with
money. No, he's
immortal with
immortal
money.
Immortal.
Yeah. Amoral. What?
But Superman is, you know, basically a god.
Until Kryptonite comes into play.
But, I mean, like, you know.
Someone's pulling kryptonite in the game somewhere, somehow.
No, there's a way to do it though. There is a way to. I don't know what that way is.
All right, so like, if enough thugs in Batman swarm them, you can get defeated just by the thugs on the street.
Yeah,
thugs in the street and Superman are nothing. They can't defeat you. You know. I don't know when you're so overpowered.
Who says it has to be common street criminals then?
Well, you kind of have like. Randos to fight.
Well, they can be random thugs from a different planet or dimension or whatever. Yeah. You know,
that's why it was in the arcade game. When no humans he was fighting, it was a bunch of alien invaders.
Yeah,
in that arcade game.
I mean, you can do it. I'm just saying it can be done. I don't know how it can be done. I don't know. You know, EA tried it back with Superman Returns, where they made the city was your health bar.
Yeah.
And if you weren't doing enough to help the city, then you would, you know, then
fail.
Well, you failed, basically. You didn't die, you failed.
It's kind of like Burning Rangers back in the day.
But
it wasn't the helpline.
He's just so overpowered.
The ship. Yeah.
I mean, I like Superman.
Yeah.
You know, but he's just so, to me, he's just so overpowered that I don't know if it'd be if you can do a good, fun game.
But it's been.
Where there are stakes, where there are challenges and risks.
I mean, Injustice.
Injustice, yeah. Well, he got popped in Injustice, yeah. Someone, look. Look, it's been well established what his weaknesses are. Kryptonite magic, okay? So someone's going to implement that one way or the other in the game for that. So I wouldn't say he's going to be undefeatable in the thing. Yeah. I would imagine they'd come up with something in that
I'm
respect.
Just wondering.
Yeah.
No, I understand. We're going to take a break here, and then when we come back, you're going to be transported back to the year 2008.
I feel younger already.
Well, you're right. We're going to go back over 10 years to an interview that we did with astronaut Charlie Duke. This is in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. At that time, he was in Huntsville talking about something, but we did talk about his time as both working at NASA and as an astronaut who was on the moon. and we've got that interview from 2008. So just keep that in mind. It is not going to be video game related, but I guarantee you it's a lot of fun. If you're one of these who enjoys space travel, all of that stuff, science, space, the moon, everything else, you will enjoy this, and it is coming up right after this break. Here is music again from Winifred Phillips, a video game composer. Did not know it, but composed for God of War. Not this reboot, but way back when. Mm-hmm. This is a track called Pandora's Box, and we'll be right back in 2008 after this.
And do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
And welcome back. Right now, I want to jump real quick here. He's waiting on the line. Is Mr. Charlie Duke. Is it Charlie, Charles? Do you have a preference?
Charlie.
Charlie. All right. Charlie Duke on the phone with us. First off, sir, thank you so much for being on the show with us tonight.
Delighted to be with you.
It is beyond an honor to be speaking with you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I don't know if you know, you may not know, but how enthusiastic we are about the space program in general.
Well, I understood you are. Yeah, great fans, and we appreciate it.
We really are. We opened the show tonight, actually, with the opening of From the Earth to the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved with that at all?
Not really. The Tom Hanks series?
Yes, yes.
I wasn't a consultant or anything, but I've watched it, and it's really good.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I have a yearly watching of that program. I just love it so much, and I love to know about the space program and the struggles and the achievements that took place in that decade that you were a part of. How did you get to, first off, just tell us a little bit about before you joined NASA.
Well, after I went in the Air Force after I graduated from the Naval Academy became a pilot. And when I was in flight school, Sputnik was launched. And to me, that was the beginning of the space age. And
right.
A few years later, Yuri Gagarin and then Alan Shepard went up in space, and I began to, as a young lieutenant, and began to dream about that. So I went to MIT, got a master's degree, and then on to test pilot school. In 1965, I was graduated from test pilot school and was working for out there on the staff when NASA said, we need more astronauts. And I said, hey, man, that's me.
Really?
Best job you could have as a test pilot. So I volunteered, got selected.
And you got selected as well. How did that... Okay, let me ask you, what happened, do you get a phone call whenever they say, hey, we're going to send you up?
No, not really. I got a phone call from Deke Slayton, who was one of the original astronauts, in April, and said, you've been selected, can you report in May? And so I said, you bet, boss, and so... And then I went out and celebrated, shouted it from the rooftop.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. So you hang up the phone after talking with Deke, and then what do you do? Do you call, or do you scream? Do you run around?
I screamed and talked to my wife, hollered at my wife, and we're going to be moving, which she was delighted. She didn't like Edwards, and Houston was more southern than Edwards, so California. So, we celebrated, I think, that weekend. We went. We started planning to move, and we had a little boy that was born, and it was about a year old, so we were real excited.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have no idea what that would have meant. I don't know how I would have felt if somebody called me up and said, hey, we want to send you to the moon.
Actually, he didn't say that. He just said, you're going to be an astronaut. And
right, that's right. It wasn't known until very last minute.
We were picked for the Apollo program. But
right.
When you started looking at Apollo, there was no guarantee that we were going to fly because we were the rookies, if you will. And unfortunately, there was a series of accidents, airplane accidents, and the fire that killed Grissom, White, and Chaffee,
right.
And then automobile accident, and then some groundings. You know, Shepard and Slayton were grounded, and then there were Glenn and Carpenter were retiring, and
mm-hmm.
So we just sort of bubbled up into the group, and it turned out that of the 19 of us that were picked on. For Apollo in 1966, quite a few of us did get to fly on Apollo, which was remarkable, I thought. You know, there was only about a little over 40 astronauts back in those days that were actually qualified to fly. So,
right.
And yet, it was very competitive, and yet we supported one another as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody got selected for a flight, you were very pleased for them, and you worked hard to help them make it a successful flight. So we were real close, and real close fraternity, and we still are.
I was going to ask you that. Do you still talk to any of the guys? I mean, you're going to be in Huntsville with Tom Stafford and Carpenter?
Yeah, right. That's part of an Omega presentation, but there are going to be other astronauts there also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's a big gala actually. Also on, Thursday night, I guess, for the dedication of the new Saturn V. Facility.
Mm-hmm.
And but Tom and Scott and I have been working with Omega over the last year or so we've got some special stuff to do. We're looking forward to that because they're a big sponsor of this event.
Right. And you know, do you still have that watch?
The one I wore on the moon is actually at the South Carolina State Museum.
Okay.
I've got an Omega on my Speedmaster on my arm right now, but
right.
It's a recent one.
Oh my goodness. But all right, so you get so excited when they say, "Hey, we want you for the Apollo program." Then
yeah.
When you find out that you're going to actually be now were you the pilot of the
I was the called a lunar module pilot,
right.
Yeah. And which is like a co-pilot or first officer in an airliner. I was on the right side. My place was on the right side of the instrument panel of the vehicle. And John Young, it was his fourth flight, and he was the commander of our mission. And so he and I were going to land the lunar module onto the moon. And
mm-hmm.
Ken Mattingly was going to be orbiting in the command ship, which was typical of every Apollo flight.
Right.
Came in, two landed, one orbited.
Exactly. And so how do you react to when you're told that?
I was really, really excited. You can't imagine the excitement that I experienced. I had been back up on Apollo 13,
mm-hmm.
and the normal sequence for Apollo was back up, and then three flights later you would fly.
Right.
So I had an inkling that if they don't cancel a program and I don't screw up, I might get to go on 16. But there was no real guarantee. But sure enough, a couple of months later, about a month after Apollo 13, I think it was, we were announced as the crew for Apollo 16. So.
And you just made it in under the wire, you know, with 17 being the last.
That's right. Yeah, they canceled the last three missions, even though the vehicles were paid for. But it was just the operational cost. And I was everybody, of course, in the astronaut office was very disappointed that they did that, because it meant that some people weren't going to get to fly.
Let me ask you this. Do you ever want to go back?
I wanted to go back the day I got back. Yeah, and I still do. I'd love to go again, but I'm 72 years old, and NASA has said, don't call us, we'll call you. And I, by the time we get ready to go again, which will be 2020s or so, I'll be in my rocking chair. I can still pass the flight physical, but they're not going to get me to fly.
Did you do anything, did you leave any type of memento behind on the moon? Did you do anything special up there as far as anything personal?
Well, yeah, a couple of things. One of the most moving parts of the personal side of it was I had carried a picture of my family. We have two sons, and who were almost 5 and 7 when I went to the moon. And so we had a picture taken in our backyard of our family, and I asked Slayton if I could take it. He said sure. So on the back of the picture, we had written, this is the astronaut of the family of astronaut Charlie Duke, who landed on the moon on Apollo 16 on the 20th of April, and we all signed it, and the kids were very excited about that. And so
yeah.
I, at the end of our day, before we got back inside, I had this picture in the pocket of my suit. I took it out and I dropped it onto the moon and took a picture of the picture. So that was very special time. And in fact, that was that scene was depicted in Tom Hanks's IMAX movie called Magnificent Desolation, Walking on the Moon.
We saw that. We a group of us went to go see that in the IMAX theaters. It was what amazed me about that, and the difference from watching From the Earth to the Moon. You'd see in the HBO series,
yeah.
you'd see you guys walking around the craters and that sort of thing. But in the IMAX film, you got a realization, you got an idea of how dangerous all that was.
Yeah, I tell you, to me, that was the only film that I've ever seen where I felt like I was back on the moon.
Yeah?
They did a really good job.
Oh, they did a magnificent job.
Yeah, and then another personal thing, it was the 25th anniversary of the Air Force,
mm-hmm.
and I was the only Air Force officer to go to the moon that year, so I was given two special silver medals to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the Air Force. One I left on the moon, one I brought back, and it's now in the Air Force Museum in Wright-Patt, in Ohio.
Well, again, it's an honor to talk to you. We got Ed Buckby on the line, and I can put you guys on at the same time here. Ed, of course, founder of the Space Camp up there in Huntsville,
yeah.
Where you're going to be on the 30th and the 31st. Ed, are you there?
Yeah, Charlie's covered the...
Uh-oh.
Covered the-
We lost. We just lost Charlie.
Oh, we did.
It looks like we lost Charlie. I hope he calls back. I really hope
too.
He does.
I think just to kind of recap, we do have the big gala on the 31st at the Space and Rocket Center, unveiling the Saturn V, and of course observing the launch of America's first free world satellite, Explorer 1, which was an Alabama product, along with the Saturn V, with Moon Rocket. It was our product we're very proud of. That morning, on the 31st at 11 o'clock, the Real Space Cowboys, which Charlie's a member of our team, will be doing an hour-and-a-half talk at the Von Braun Center.
Right.
It's open to the public, free. And we'll be Scott Carpenter, Tom Stafford, and Charlie Duke will be talking about their missions, and we'll go through a whole series of visuals, and they'll be telling some more stories and things behind the scenes. We'll have a big time with that.
Well, I hope Charlie calls us back, because we were nowhere near done with talking to him.
I thought you probably were.
Not at all. So I hope he calls back.
Well, I do too. You got a number? Somebody can call him or whatever.
Actually, no. He had our number.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
I really hope he calls back or. I hope that's him, because I will be kicking myself if it's not. But anyway, Ed, while we've got you on, founder of Space Camp, when was all that established there in Huntsville?
In 82, Von Braun really came up with that idea before he passed away, and we just, kicked it around for a few years, and finally we got it off the ground in 1982 and opened our first sessions, and we had a very successful season, and then all of a sudden the movie came out, Space Camp, and that was like a giant advertisement for us. And
it really was,
went
wasn't
from
it?
A few hundred youngsters to thousands of young people, and now they tell me over 500,000 kids have gone through Space Camp since that thing opened in 1982.
So let me see if I can get Charlie back on here, because
good.
I believe some of his memorabilia is up there with you guys.
You bet. One of the most valuable artifacts that we've ever touched is here.
Let me see if I can. Let me see if I can get him on. I don't want to. If I hang up on you,
okay, I'll
please,
call you back.
Please call back.
Yeah.
There's supposed to be a light that's supposed to light up when I press this button.
Gotcha.
It hasn't done that. So anyway, let's see if here we go. All right, I think I've got you both. Charlie, are you there?
Hello, Houston. I'm back.
There you go. Yeah, I was just.
I am so sorry. There's some old equipment in here, and it doesn't always work. But
that's okay.
I'd like to blame it on the equipment other than myself. So thanks for calling back. We were just talking to Ed, and I don't know if you could hear us while we were on hold. Something pretty, not really personal, but I guess very valuable to you while you were in space is over at the Huntsville Space Camp. What is that?
It's our command module.
Yeah.
Apollo 16 command module that we flew to the moon in and returned us to safely to Earth, and it was very, very special. We spent 11 days, Mattingly spent 11 days in it. We had 3 days on the moon, so 8 days in that little vehicle for us.
Let me ask you something about Mattingly real quick. We talked about this when we were talking about, Armstrong's step on the moon and everything like that. Everybody was so focused on, we put a man on the moon. Yet here's this guy in the module up there who goes behind the moon, and for about 12 hours is completely alone by himself. With he has no contact. He has nothing. What goes on?
Well, in our flight, actually, the out of contact is only about 45 minutes of every orbit.
Okay.
The rest of the time you're around on the front side of the moon, so you're in communications with Earth.
Right.
But if you're during your rest period, of course, they don't transmit unless something's wrong.
And by that time, you go back around behind.
Then you go
them,
back right? around yeah. again. Yeah. And Mattingly was very, very busy. He had a suite of science experiments that were back in the service module, and mapping cameras and stereo cameras and all kind of mass spectrometers and stuff like that. So he was very, very busy during his time in orbit and did a real good job of mapping under our orbit of the moon during his 3 days alone.
And what now? You went. I guess when you orbit. Did you guys orbit the moon? You had to come back around.
We were together. We were together for about 24 hours before we landed, and then we were together a day, 24 hours after we lifted off and rendezvoused. So we were actually in orbit. Apollo was actually in orbit for 16 on for 5 days. So Mattingly had 5 days in orbit, and we had two, and then three on the moon.
What happens whenever you go behind the moon? I mean,
well, it gets real quiet, and
what's that feeling like?
You're out of contact, and then you start hearing these noises in the spacecraft. You know, the thing, strange sounding noises, you know, that you don't recognize or realize they're there on the front side because there's communications and stuff like that. But there's some strange woo, you know, things like that going on, you know, and it's sort of a psychedelic in a way. But,
really?
Wow.
Yeah, it's just a spacecraft making its own little noises, right, and inverters and stuff like that.
What is the one thing you remember from the trip?
I think to me probably the highlight, of course, was the landing on the moon. We were 6 hours late landing because we had a very serious problem in Mattingly's command module, a service module, before we land, about an hour before we were to land, and that delayed our landing for 6 hours. Thanks to the teamwork and the expertise and the problem solving of Mission Control, they solved our problem, fixed our problem, made a workaround, and they gave us a go for landing 6 hours later.
Did you bring back anything you kept yourself?
Yeah, we have a few little mementos that we were able to bring back, some checklist maps, pins from out on the lunar surface that we were part of our experiments package that were going to be discarded, and I just stuck them in my pocket. No moon rocks, though. They didn't keep any moon rocks.
Really? They didn't? Nothing? It all had to go?
Well, it all went back to, the lunar receiving lab.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the checklists have a little dust on them, but that's about it. NASA, actually, 2 years ago, I guess it was, said, okay, we'll give you a moon rock, but you got to give it to somebody. And so I gave mine to my prep school. I went to Admiral Farragut Academy in St. Petersburg, Florida, and I gave mine there. And it turned out that Farragut is the only school in the only high school in the United States with two moonwalkers. Alan Shepard went there, and I went there.
Wow.
So it was very special for me to give them that moon rock.
You have to ask Charlie about how much he made. Everybody thinks astronauts who walked on the moon made a bunch of money. Charlie, you have to tell them how much.
Well, I was a lieutenant colonel, and I made whatever that salary was back in those days, which was a good salary. But a trip to the moon was a little extra. It's temporary duty, so they gave you $25 a day per diem. And I actually filled out a travel voucher, as we all did. And, you know, Kennedy, Moon, Pacific, 11 days, $275. However, government quarters and meals were furnished, so they deducted that part.
Wow.
I got a check for $13.75.
Goodness. Oh, man. It's, again, it is just an honor to talk with you. And, I mean, how closely do you follow along with NASA these days?
Well, I watch the flights. I'm not a consultant in the strict sense of the word, though I am helping MIT. My old thesis advisor is still a professor at MIT, and he has some grants from NASA to look at future lunar missions, and I'm on his one of his consultants, and we're just getting spooled up for that.
Yeah.
But I watch a great program; it still fascinates me, and we're very excited.
Yeah, it's we do the same thing. If I can't watch them live, you know, I set the VCR to record, the TiVo to record, or whatever the launches that they have there, and it's it doesn't happen often. I wish it happened more so. I really wish, and I wish we'd go to the moon again.
Well, if we stay alive long enough, we're going to do it. 2020, 2025, I think, that's the focus and that's the direction. Of course, it's subject to the whims of the Congress and the desire, presidential direction. But right now, the direction is to commit to another moon base program, which would kick off probably 2020 or so.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I guess, I don't know, it's one of those things where you think, can you get past the government in order to do this? I mean, You know, it's had its problems in the past with the accidents that have happened, the tragedies that have happened as well. And then, but this, and of course, we keep going back into space. But then to propose, hey, let's go to the moon again, to get over those, I guess, those fears that, you know, we haven't done it in, what, 30 years?
Well, if this be 30, last December was the 35th anniversary of the end of Apollo moon landings.
Right. And so I'm wondering, do we have to build up that, not necessarily that confidence again, but that...
I think the confidence is there and the enthusiasm is there on the part of NASA.
Oh, the enthusiam for them is there, yeah.
Finding the program and building it piece by piece and getting it checked out and ready to go. We'll actually use the part, it's called the Constellation Program, and we'll actually use the what we would call the command module to take crews back and forth to the space station first. Then once we get the launch vehicles done and everything checked out, some future-looking lunar module, we'll commit.
Yeah.
That's the program now. Whether the monies will be there for that is another problem.
Another question that I'm curious about. Do the pictures that we see of you on the moon and of everyone else on the moon and the pictures of the moon that we've got, do they really do it any justice at all?
I thought the pictures were very accurate. The first ones, Apollo 8, they had sort of a brown tint to them, but after that, the pictures got very, very good, and we were able to, the exposures we got right, the f-stops we got right, the speeds we got right of the cameras, and the pictures that we took and every other flight after Apollo 8 I thought were excellent. Captured the beauty, the images, and the awesomeness of the moon.
Yeah, it's great. And again, I want to remind the listeners of what's going on. It happens now. There's a dinner, of course. When is the dinner? It's on the 30th, I believe.
It's Thursday night, isn't it?
It's on the 31st.
The 31st.
Okay.
Our panel discussions began at 9 o'clock on the morning of the 31st and run until 2:30. There's three different panels. One's kind of the history of remembering Explorer 1. The second is our real space cowboys. And the third is the future, vision of the future.
That's, you know, and the future is something I'm interested in. Now, of course, you just mentioned 2020 as far as going back to the moon. You know, what do you think about shooting for Mars?
Well, I think that's down the road quite a ways as far as human presence on Mars. But the NASA's very busy launching spacecraft to Mars right now, and they've got those two rovers, Spirit and Endeavour, I think it are. They were designed for 3 months, and what is it now, 4 years? And they're sort of hibernating there in the Mars winter, but it's amazing what they've accomplished. And so robotics has really gotten extremely good, and... a lot of knowledge coming back about Mars, and so I think that eventually we'll send human beings to Mars. Hopefully the lunar missions will help to develop those systems in such a way that mm-hmm. we can spend that year or 2 years going to Mars and return with humans.
What do you think about those independent flights that these outside companies are proposing to?
Well, that's a long right now. I'm all for it, first off, but it's a long way from orbit.
Glad you are, because I am too. If it can get me into space, whatever can get me up there.
It's suborbital, but it's going to be a very unique experience. It'd be like flying the X-15. And back, 40 years ago. And so I think that it's something that people start paying for, and eventually that's going to lead into orbital flight with passengers.
Mm-hmm.
It won't cost you $20 million to fly with the Russians. I doubt. But we'll see. But I'm all for that, and I think that that's the... The future is a lot of commercial. Of course, most of the satellites and all of that stuff are launched now on commercial ventures, and a lot of just commercial satellites up there right now, and that's all great.
What was I'm sure the question you get asked the most, hey, what was it like on the moon? And which is not, you know, you've been asked that plenty of times. But yeah, that's the experience we want to know about. I want to know, what did you feel when you saw, I mean, were you witness to what they called an Earthrise?
Yes. As a matter of fact, our first, we entered orbit, we call it translunar coast, and once we got into proper position, we fired our engine, service module engine, service propulsion system engine to slow us down, and we went into lunar orbit on the backside of the moon in darkness, and then we had first sunrise, which was very dramatic.
Yeah.
And then we came around about 20 minutes later, and we had Earthrise, and that what I call that jewel of Earth was just suspended up there in the blackness of space, and it appeared to be a half Earth to us. The moon was half full, and the Earth was half, and it was, you could see clearly the ice caps, Antarctica and the Arctic, and then a lot of clouds in between my first view, and so I wouldn't call it the blue planet, I'd call it the white planet, because of all the cloud cover that day. But it was spectacular, especially that, it was just brilliant, and just hung up there in that blackness of space. And when I say blackness of space, it's not like being in a cave with no light. It's not that kind of surrounding blackness, because you're all in sunlight, and it's just this. But out there, it's like a jewel on a velvet cloth, black cloth, and that's the present. That's the blackness of space.
Wow, that's amazing, Charlie. This is Jeremy, and I feel like a little kid talking to you. I'm just completely in awe.
Oh, thank you.
what did you guys do on the trip to and on the return trip from the moon in the module?
On the way out, we were mostly in the command module, and we had a series of experiments that we helped Ken Mattingly do. Electrophoresis, which I don't remember what that was. We had a light flash. We call it light flashes, an experiment, which was Buzz Aldrin had reported these light flashes, and it turns out they're cosmic rays penetrating either the optic nerve or the retina, and when that happens, it flashes inside your. It's like a fireworks display inside your eyeball.
Wow.
And NASA was concerned about what are these, and so we had a special experiment that we did to determine, and it turned out they were that we thought they were cosmic rays, but we wanted to make sure, and sure enough, they were. Then we did just a lot of general just housekeeping, reviewing flight plans on the way out. On the way back, the most memorable part of the return to me was we had a spacewalk or an EVA on the way back where Mattingly and I were able to get out, open the hatch and get outside.
Oh, wow.
John stayed inside tending the store, and Mattingly had some work to do, and I was just his safety observer. So I was just floating outside with my feet hooked in the hatch.
Okay, I was wondering. I was wondering if you actually floated. What kind of?
Well, I didn't let
it
go. No, Mattingly had he didn't actually let go of the spacecraft. He had handholds, and then he had a safety tether, and I was holding the safety tether, making sure it wasn't going to get hooked up in reaction control engines and stuff like that.
I can only imagine how nerve-wracking it must be.
Well, actually, we were just in awe of the beauty of it.
Well, I'm sure it's beautiful, but then you know, you're his lifeline.
Well, in a way, yeah. I mean, if I'd have dropped dead, he'd still be connected to the spacecraft. I was holding it, but I was actually just tending it because it was actually anchored to the spacecraft.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of guiding it in and out, you know, like a fireman would do at the back of a hose. But it was spectacular outside. Off to the right was the Earth, 180,000 miles away. Just a little thin sliver of blue and white, and I looked over my left shoulder, and there was this gigantic almost full moon over my shoulder.
Much bigger than I guess what we could ever imagine.
Oh, man, it just seemed like it took up the whole sky over my left shoulder. And we were, you know, what, 50,000 miles away.
Can you feel a difference, like being in the spacecraft? And I know the suits do a good bit to shield you from a lot of things. But as soon as you sort of, not necessarily step out, but once you're outside of that, can you feel the slightest bit of difference, a little bit temperature change or pressure change or anything like that? Can you feel a little bit of that through the suit at all? Or?
Well, the suit was actually pressurized. The command module had 5.5 PSI. Pounds per square inch right. pressure inside. The suits were 3.5. But 3.5 in a spacesuit is really rigid, so you have to work against the joints of the suit. You have to actually squeeze your hands against the glove to grasp things. So you feel that part. But other than that, the temperature is easily controlled. We had cooling unit inside the suit, and so we could regulate temperature very well. And so we never got really hot or really cold compared to the earlier EVAs where they got really, really hot back in Gemini.
I think you also mentioned it was like a duck waddle, was it, when you were walking on the moon?
Well, on the moon, yeah. Because you're stiff-legged, you can't bend your knee like you do in a normal gait here on Earth.
Yeah.
So you just sort of swing one leg out in front of the other, and I called it the duck waddle.
Did you, they did it, or they showed it in From the Earth to the Moon, I have no idea, but did you guys, was there some tradition about throwing the hammer, or... when you guys were done and, you know, done with that and about to leave the surface of the moon.
Well, yeah, everybody just, you know, we weren't going to bring it back, so which I wish we had. It had been a great souvenir from somewhere. But we weren't going to take it back inside with us, and so it was sort of like the discus throw or the hammer throw in the Olympics, you know, see how far you could make it go.
Did you throw it?
I don't remember. I don't think so. I think John had it in his pocket, and he threw it.
I'm just kind of curious what that's like to throw something and see it just go on endlessly.
It just looked like it was spinning and spinning in slow motion, and you know, it's basically 1/6 the spin rate and 1/6 the fall as you throw
yeah.
it. So it went a long way. Yeah.
Charlie, could you describe for us what the reentry was like?
The overwhelming impression was spectacular. We started hitting the atmosphere at what was 400,000 feet, and you just see little flashes go off outside, like a series of flash bulbs scattered, or, you know, fireflies, lightning bug type stuff, just flashes outside that rapidly built up to a huge fireball outside, and the G level increased dramatically from 0 to 7.5, and as the spacecraft autopilot was controlling the reentry, Apollo didn't have any wings, but it did have lift. You could fly it in a certain manner, so it had cross range, down range. You could control by the angle of lift that you rolled it around. So as you looked through this fireball, you could see, first off, the blackness of space, then it'd roll over, and you could see the Pacific Ocean. And it was very smooth and cool inside, and it was smooth ride, but it was just this tremendous deceleration and this gigantic fireball that was the most impressive thing out the window. But you never worried about it, you know, burn through anything like that. You had real secure feeling.
Well, you know, good job on the NASA guys for giving you such a feeling like that, or
yeah.
you know, making you feel as safe as you did. Well, I appreciate you guys being on the show with us tonight. I really do. And thank you, Ed, as well.
You're welcome.
And,
well, it's a pleasure.
It's a great honor.
Yes, it is beyond an honor to get to talk to you.
Glad we could work it out.
Thank you so very much, and it's great, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
That I can't really tell you what an honor and what a feeling that was to talk to that man right now. Thank you. And welcome back to In-Game Chats. That actually kind of would have been okay to play at the end of that interview. This comes from... This is Winifred Phillips, video game composer. And we've been featuring music that she has worked on in this episode, with the exception of what you heard earlier just before that interview. This comes from a game I didn't know that she did the music for it. I remember when I grabbed music for it way back when, I was just like, music from this game, here we go. This is the finale track from the video game The Maw by Twisted Pixel. Yeah. So, thank you to everybody who sent, I got some Facebook messages, I got a few texts talking about that they were really enjoying that interview. So, I can tell you.
How many times do you get to listen to someone that's, you know, stepped on the moon?
I know.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or talk to, just, you know. Talk to somebody who has. There's interviews with people who've been on the moon all over the place, but to be able to actually have a conversation with somebody on the mm-hmm. phone, even on the phone, was just an honor that unbelievable for me to experience.
Like I said, man, keep that.
Oh no, no, no,
Yeah,
back it up if you have.
Like
to.
We said during the thing, it made me think about 50 years ago today. You know, Michael Collins was, in my opinion, the loneliest human being mm-hmm. ever. You know, because at least Buzz and Neil had each other down there on the surface. He's mm-hmm. by himself, thousands of miles away from his home, his planet, everybody, you know. I can't imagine how lonely that was. I mean, I'm sure he was doing work and everything, but, like, can you imagine how lonely that was?
And something to keep him occupied doing his thing out there, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be something.
So, I mean, it's neat that we're able to interview Mr. Duke and, mm-hmm. you know, a treasure, you know, so mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah.
So, RJ.
Yeah.
I know Scott posted this in our
Sorry about that. That was Chris.
Yeah.
He brought up a really good game that he didn't just triple dip. He bought four times. Minecraft.
I can see that.
Yeah. What were you saying, Matt? I'm sorry.
Asking RJ, did you see the Witcher trailer that Scott posted?
Little bits and pieces of it. I didn't. Saw it, like, hovering over, and it started playing a little bit.
I still need to see more on that. I mean, I need to watch an episode. Yeah. You know, but from what I read today, what I'm reading a lot of is apparently at the panel they said we are not adapting the video games.
Okay, it's more on the book.
Apparently so. Yeah, and I want to say that there was some departure between the games and the books, but I do not remember or even know what that departure was. I'm still fine with it, and I'm also not writing it off or anything. I'm just like, you know what? You've made this. Yeah. I'm going to watch it when it comes out, and I will make my judgment.
It has association with a video game series that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Makes me really want to go back, because I was thinking about that after watching it. Like, I need to finish Witcher 3. I never did. But, like, oh, man, it's been over a year or so since I last played it. It's been a good while. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the mechanics. I don't have that muscle memory anymore, right? You know, when you play a game like that.
It doesn't take long to lose your muscle memory and mechanics in a game.
Would it be, like, I don't want to start a new game because, like, I got some really good equipment. I've got pretty far in it and everything. Like, I'm just like, oh.
But you could always watch a YouTube video or something like that.
I'll probably just have to get, like, load it back up and just, you know, just tool around.
I mean, that's me with a lot of games. I want to get back to Horizon.
Yeah.
Zero Dawn. I want to get back into God of War. I never finished either of those two games. And my muscle memory on playing those, I say my muscle, my controller memory, completely gone. Spider-Man, I still wanted to finish as far as the DLC stuff.
Uh-huh.
Totally have no idea what that is and how to play that. You know, Detroit, obviously, it's a QTE, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. If a game is full QTE, I can deal with that. I don't need controller memory, really.
You just have to remember where the buttons are.
Yeah,
but since the majority of what I play is placed or console, the majority of what I play would be on PS4, I'm good with that.
My confusion sometimes is, like, some games I have with QTE, I'll play on the computer with my Xbox controller, so it pops up the Xbox, A, B, X, Y.
Right, yeah.
Then when I go to play on the PlayStation 4, you know, it's the square, circle, triangle, and X. Mm-hmm. And so, like, just trying to, like, remember which button correlates with, you know, sometimes that just throws me off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In my case, it would be Sekiro. It's been a long time since I played that, and I'd have to relearn everything from the get-go on that one.
It's like that a lot with those, though, isn't it?
Well, I'm talking about games that not QTE, but games in particular. It's been a long time since I played it, so I'm going to have to relearn everything.
Yeah,
Spider-Man the same way, because I haven't even got the DLC for that game, but I still plan to eventually. Just hadn't thought about it much until you said something, actually.
Or if you go between like games that like Red Dead 2 or for me that and Assassin's Creed Odyssey, right? Like just trying to like have your brain switch from one gear to the other.
Yeah, Red Dead would be another one that if I got back into, I wouldn't know how.
All right, how do I do the zoom on the sniper? All right, how do I do
Red Dead? At least I guess Red Dead probably gives you a little bit. Not necessarily. Look, I'm early into it.
Or for me, like the big thing was like calling the horse in both games, like because one's one way, I think one's the other way, and like just trying to remember like
Red Dead's open world though. I could just sort of not do a mission and just kind of just ride out there and mess around. You know, I probably get the same sort of thing out of Spider-Man to get that back. But what you lack is your strategy to combat is
that
not
fine
there.
Tune and you're,
right.
Yeah.
You've built it up all this way to where you know when you get into to combat, you fire this off. It's just like Destiny. We were talking with James like this last week when I know with whenever I create my Titan, which will be when Shadowkeep releases, the new one, I have that whatever. I have something that'll bring me all the way up to where I need to be.
Yeah.
Just immediately.
The MacGuffin machine.
Yeah, exactly. But I will not have learned that character's abilities and messed with them enough to know that when I do this, I should do this and this behind it and sort of get that feel for it. And so it's the same way, I guess, with something like it would be for Spider-Man God of War Horizon Zero Dawn. Horizon, unfortunately, my save point is at a encounter.
No.
Is at a boss encounter.
So, yeah, you've
so
got
I have a... no option to, like, mess around and figure out how to do it all over again. So
wow.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's one of those... I don't remember which one
it
is.
Start a new game and just, you know...
Mess around and then jump back to that save.
Go back to that save file.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a possibility.
I think that's what I'm going to have to do with Sekiro. Like I said, the reason I haven't played in a while because I'm so far behind in getting life building for my health bar. I've missed a lot of stuff, so I'm thinking I'm just gonna have to start over from scratch, start a new game and get everything I need to, because I've missed way too much in that game. Yeah, that's what I have to do.
Well, we are coming to the end of this episode, and I want to thank everybody again who normally tunes into this to listen to maybe video games or something. You kind of caught a little bit of
something different.
Yeah, something, and kind of going
something special.
Yeah, way back. If you only started listening to us recently, that's what we sounded like over 10 years ago.
So optimistic.
From this same studio, which, by the way, I was listening to the beginning of that. I was trying to find that interview. Talking to Jeremy about the webcam that used to hang up in that corner right
on
there.
On the paperclip?
Oh, yeah. I think Phil called in. Phil Kohler called in at the beginning of that episode. Track Zero called in. Drew, a couple of others as well who used to call in and say hello. So it was kind of nice to hear some of that, but I was really in a hurry to find the interview itself to get it ready to go. So thank you. Thank you for letting us do that.
Do you have time to say who's in the chat room now?
I think I can. Let's see. Ooh, what is this? Is different.
Okay, that's not good.
This is not what I'm used to seeing. Oh, they've changed it. I don't know how to see who's in the see. Chat identity, show timestamp, pop out chat. I've done that. Dark mode.
Well, I guess if you're in the chat room, thank you.
I don't have. Yeah, I don't.
Upper right.
Upper. Oh, there it is. Users in chat. There you go.
Thanks, random.
AC Wraith, Angel of Flight, or of Light. Another TV viewer, Commander Root, Community Showcase, Energy Z Bot, Freddy Bot. There's a bunch of bots. Fubel Plays It. Host Me Raf. That's another bot. Lethal Migraine. Lurks. Motal. Random NX. S1 Faker. Steven Van Dam. Tactus 59. Ted. T-E-Y-Y-D. The Delinquent. Tony Indigo. V-N-K. And Wonk.
Wonko the Sane.
Wonko the Sane, 416. Yes. There we go. Thanks, everybody,
for
joining us.
Yes.
Have a fantastic week, and we will see you next Saturday. Here's music from Little Big Planet 2. It's called Eve's Asylum.
We are.